Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. We are rapidly trying to get Randy Hahn on the line. Once we do, we'll bring him to you. In the meantime, we will continue on where we left off.
Jets, Sabres tonight, and one more game against the Bruins, and then the Sharks are Thursday, I believe. So they've got a couple games, but wow, that schedule. I think when I wrote it in the preview, I think upcoming 13 out of 19 games on the road.
Yeah, well, it has to get started.
Right? Richie, I think you're right. This is a must win. When you throw up two stinkers in a row, I'd say it's a must win.
You got Boston.
Especially you have Boston and San Jose coming up at the beginning of the week, and next Saturday, New Jersey, an afternoon contest. So we'll be on at 8 a.m. next Saturday.
New Jersey's playing good hockey right now.
Yeah, they certainly are.
Peter DeBoer's done a nice job there. Yep. We've seen firsthand the Devils a couple times now.
Yeah.
I like their game. They're a little bit more aggressive than the old Devil style that people maybe attribute to them. And, you know, they get Zajac back, although he missed last game. He's got a sore Achilles, and he's not going to be 100% for the rest of the year.
And he was replaced by who? Drum roll, Clarkson's Steve Zalewski.
Oh, there you go. Well played, because Clarkson plays tonight at UND.
First NHL game last night.
At the MTS Center. At MTS Center, excuse me. But, you know, quickly, guys, let's talk about...
By the way, it's worth noting that the answer to the question, by the way, the trivia question, which was won by Gary, is that both Mark Chipman and Richard Pollock attended UND Law School. That was the answer.
I didn't know that. That's weird.
Yeah.
So good for Gary. He's a cousin of mine. No, I'm just kidding.
And for the record, not Gary Lawless.
Gary
Lawless. But
that's Gary Lawless's pseudonym.
Yeah. Anyways, noting that.
The Sharks are in town on Thursday, and we're going to have Randy on. That's why we're having Randy on to talk about it. But, you know, Drew, you talk about Boston, and then you talk about San Jose, and then you mentioned New Jersey, but not only is it the 13-19 road games. I mean, this is not a this next three-game stretch. All these teams are over 500.
Yeah.
Boston's dominant. San Jose is always a dangerous team. And then you have a New Jersey team that we just mentioned is playing well. You probably have a talent disparity, frankly, to all three teams. And so, and against Buffalo, too, I mean, it's an uphill battle. And I think people got a little bit clouded with their judgment when the Jets tore up the December against some good teams, some not so great teams, and obviously playing at home. But I think what happened in December was this, Drew. The team won a lot of games that they maybe should have won. And I think all those games went their way. And, you know, the Jets didn't dominate many teams. I mean, aside from Montreal in December there, at the end of December, I don't know if there's one game that the Jets dominated. And without that domination, you have a lot of coin flips. And when they go your way, generally what happens, Ezzy, later on, they don't go your way.
I would agree with that. They have definitely benefited from both Andre Pavlik and Chris Mason sealing games, and I agree with that. A lot of they haven't dominated teams, but they have played well and have deserved to win, I think, the majority of the games. Big difference.
Not as many as they did, though, I would say. I think they got lucky a bit.
But on the other hand, there's a few, let's say, polarizing things that have happened in the first half of the Jets season.
Okay.
You've got, obviously, the awesome home record and the awful road record, just things that bad signs. You want to be a little bit more equal there, and then you've got games where they're getting absolutely hammered. And the problem that I versus games that are close, you've had for a Jets team that right now is three games above 500. You've really had the tale of two teams. You've got a road team and an away team. Pardon me, that's not two things.
That's
weird. You've got a home team and an away away team, and they're two different teams. And the problem that I had. Sure, I mean, you can look at individual performances in the Toronto game and the Montreal game, but as a team, they weren't good. And the problem that I had is that the Jets allowed the Leafs and the Habs to basically beat them. I don't think that the Leafs or the Habs even are a better hockey team.
Do you buy
the
argument that the home crowd is giving the Jets some sort of extra boost to start?
You have to acknowledge that. I think that's fairly on display now, I think, at this point. Now, that has been the case. But I think, you know, as you talk about the Montreal and Toronto games and what was wrong with the team at those games, their defensive coverage was poor. But this is my issue. The team cannot sustain offense. And in the Montreal game, if it wasn't Kane and Wheeler, it was really nobody.
Yeah.
And in the Toronto game, you know, Bermistrov got on that line. That was their best chance at the end of the second period when they put him with talent and they had the talent. Yeah. Kane,
Thorburn hit that crossbar in the first period,
Thorburn
too.
Thorburn hit that crossbar, but sustained offense. Who was sustaining offense? And when you see the Lions go out there, you go, do we have a chance to get significant pressure. And I'll tell you this. The Jets had about three sustained shifts in the whole Toronto game, about a minute in the other team's zone.
Towards the end of the second period there.
And in the third there, too. And of those three long shifts in the other team's zone, no good scoring chances came of it.
Right.
And there is, and I've said it before, guys, there's a lack of talent on this team. That's why when you're not playing a guy like Burmistrov, to me, it magnifies that, because you need, you know, Kyle just tweeted in, Kyle Kocher writes for the site, said an old coach once said to him, you just play your best guys and just let the other team adjust. And I don't think, and I think Clonewell has done a good job, and we're going to do our ratings and our awards for the second half of the year in the last hour of this show. But it's at some point in time, you have to acknowledge that this team needs to load up on its offensive guys and kind of let them play.
Especially because I don't think that their depth guys, their third and fourth line guys, I don't think are that... there's not a huge disparity. They're not playing AHL guys in their third and fourth lines. No. So you do stack up that first line. And that first line with Little and Kane and Wheeler is fine. It's a good first line. Then you make that second line legitimate. And by making it legitimate means putting Burmistrov up there and not having Wellwood up there. I'm sorry.
Yep.
He's just not talented enough to be a second line player in the NHL.
And well, Stapleton's been playing a lot of those minutes right now.
Stapleton was playing those minutes, largely because Little was out. But you're right. You should have seen Burmistrov playing those minutes and not Stapleton.
Okay. And that's my issue with it. And I realize he hasn't been skating well. There's some of the blame needs to fall on his shoulders. And I understand that. And I'm taking that into account. But having said that, what's the alternative, guys? And that's a big... Like, what is the alternative here?
Don't start delaying his development and just trying to constantly keep getting different guys going.
He was tearing up his struggles. To me, he was actually playing well when he was moved to the fourth line. And then since then... I mean, the problem is this, and I always have this issue. You can't play a talented player on the fourth line and say, I'm not playing you anymore because you're not producing. Well, you're putting me with fourth line talent. What do you expect?
When you play with Dreck, it's hard to overcome the Dreck.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's maybe a little simplistic,
and especially Drew. I know Burmistrov likes to carry the puck and do those things, but Burmistrov is not a shooter. I think he had 100 shots last year. I mean, he shoots maybe just over one a game, and when you're not a shooter, what do? You pass, and what do passers rely on? Scorers beside them,
right? So Antropov works nicely.
Anyway, when you put him with guys, he can't score.
Well, you know,
that only exacerbates the problem you have.
Evander Kane doesn't pass. Right. So there you go. There's your answer right there. I mean, it seems as though it's almost a little bit too easy.
I mean, Antropov's played poorly, and I realize Ladd has the goals, but I mean, and Ladd has some percentages that are eventually going to hit his way, but I mean,
he should give credit for Evander Kane's pass to Tim Stapleton in that Montreal game. That was a really nice goal. He did pass on that one.
Yeah, no, he does sometimes. I mean, he's not a good passer, though, but he does sometimes pass.
It's not his strength, and they don't expect him to be a playmaker. They expect him to be a finisher.
That's something he definitely has to improve.
He's an up-and-down winger, but... Yeah. No.
I mean, it's just really what it boils down to is you need your top players playing the most minutes in the most important situations.
Yep.
You need to rely on your horses. That's why you have horses.
That's right.
Ride your horses.
And Drew, when you talk about the long-term future of the Jets going forward, and you look at the pieces of the Jets, and when you look at a Pittsburgh or a Chicago, teams that have had success recently, and you look at who they've built their team around, maybe not so much Chicago, but I like to compare Pittsburgh. And, you know, you've got Marc-Andre Fleury. Okay, well, we've got Andre Pavlik. They've got Chris Letang. Well, we've got Zach Bogosian. You can throw Enstrom in there.
Because it's just two different worlds.
No, I know. I'm not saying that Winnipeg, guys are as good.
Hang on, Etsy. I know where you're going with this. And this is your question. 5 years from now, who do you want to be on this team? Do you want
Evander
Kyle
Kane?
Wellwood to be on this team, or do you want Alex Burmistrov to be on this team?
Right, and you can't make the argument that isn't Burmistrov. It's easy. And I think that they have to start thinking of, we're 40 games into the season. Tonight is officially the midway point. It's the 41st game.
Right. Yeah.
And I think we've said this, at least I've said this time and time again, December was the month to get them back in the playoff race.
That's right.
But now it's what they're going to do in January and early February. When you're in a position where you're a couple of weeks, it's going to be after they've played these 13 road games and 19 games, and they're in mid-February, and Kevin Cheveldayoff has to make the decision, are we a buyer or a seller? Are we actually going to make the playoffs?
You can't buy.
They can't buy.
They can't even if they are in the playoffs, what are they going
to
do?
If I were them, I would sell, even if they're close to the playoffs. I would sell.
Well, and you're going to be in a position, Drew. You have to have Patrice Cormier up in the lineup. You have to start bringing Klingberg, and you have to start thinking of who are the guys that we're going to turn into
the future
second
of this
and third
team.
Line guys
now,
on this
I'll
team.
I'll say this. That could be, and I don't think they're going to be that close to make the decision difficult, but for Kevin Cheveldayoff, you know, say the Southeast Division escapes them, so they're not going to be a third seed, and then that doesn't happen. If that's the case, and then you're just going to try and be the eighth seed. And there's an issue here in terms of pressure from ownership for money, guys, because a home gate in the playoffs is at least $1 million. Say they get three home gates, it's $3 million. So let me tell you this. If it's between Drew finishing, you know, ninth and eighth, I'd rather go for the playoff experience than the two-slot draft pick difference. Yep. But, or however that may, or however that turns out, but...
If it's the difference between finishing 13th and 8th.
Yeah, that's, you know, 13th and 8th. If you get the, well, that's a little bit different. But if you get the playoff, if you get the playoff experience and it's a very little difference in terms of the draft pick, I understand that. Even so, I still think you can trade many guys on this roster and not see a huge drop-off.
Well, we've talked about Johnny Oduya. Yeah. We've talked about Ron Hainsey.
Yeah, I think they'll trade both of them.
I mean, you have Mark Flood, who can step into the lineup, no question asked.
They just make too much money for what they produce.
You've got Paul Postman, Artis Kolda, who can easily make the Jets next year.
Yeah. I mean, and this is no knock on those
Postman
guys.
Postman more than Kolda, but I think that, exactly, Drew, and I think Yatropov has to be out there. I think those three guys have to be traded.
Richie, regardless of what happens in the next 6 weeks, the Jets are not going to make five moves at the trade deadline. Well, you're going to see a couple of guys move.
And I hope they move them out as opposed to moving them in. We haven't also talked about, guys, quickly, we have a few minutes here. We haven't talked about, I think the Jets brass, and while they won't say it, obviously they won't come out and say it, has to be a little bit disappointed in Mark Scheifele's performance at the World Juniors.
Well, he was sort of, I'm not a huge World Juniors fan, as we've spoken about before. He certainly, if he was going to be the number one center on that team, and I think there was some intention that he was going to be the number one center coming into the start of that tournament.
Said, did you,
they had said that. He didn't perform like that. He was sort of invisible.
Okay, but did you expect him to pull a Braden Schenn or a Jordan Eberle? I didn't. He had 6 points.
No.
He had 6 points in the tournament.
His points were fairly insignificant, though. He didn't play a big role. You expected Mark Scheifele to play a big role.
This is a small sample size. It doesn't indicate that he's going to be a great player or not a great player, but I think if you're looking for encouraging signs, put up against the best players, you know, as he performed well in the other Canadian events, put up against the best players, didn't have the best camp, they said, in the summer, and then he comes in here, and he doesn't have a very successful, at least live up to expectations, junior performance. I think that has to make them a little bit more guarded about what they expect from him. And that doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player, but just a factor to take into account when evaluating him as a player.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I mean, you hope that he's going to turn around. He's been very good in Barrie this year.
Yeah, very good.
So maybe this is an anomaly. Maybe he's more, wasn't comfortable with his line mates or anything. But when he was talked about as being the number one center coming into the tournament, he didn't play as the number one center for Team Canada.
He didn't dominate, but to be honest with you, I wasn't expecting that.
What were his numbers in the Russia game?
We can look it up.
The problem is on Team Canada, first off, you were missing a lot of guys, and they always are. But when you're talking about Team Canada in that tournament, and you put that number one center, it's different than...
It wasn't me saying it, it was Team Canada saying it.
But when you're saying number one center on Team Canada in the tournament, first off, you have four number one lines in a tournament like that. Just like the Olympics, guys, come on, let's be honest. In tournaments like that, it's not the same thing as a club number one line. You'd agree with that, right?
That's fair. It doesn't mean that he performed well.
No, I didn't say he did.
But I think doesn't mean that even if the other guys really, you know, I understand what you're saying, as in saying that there's four centers, so they could all be number ones and they could all shift about, sure. But then that means that he was outplayed by the other three.
He didn't
centers.
Overwhelm, but I don't think he underwhelmed.
Was that?
I disagree with you there. Let's leave it there.
He underwhelmed, but it's not predictive. It's not.
Get 6 points.
Ultimately,
it's
predictive of his future success.
Exactly. Underwhelmed, but I don't think it means anything necessarily in the real big picture.
But it may.
Exactly. You never know. Not to read too much into it, but just a little bit disappointing.
He had a great bronze medal game.
Great.
2 points.
Let's leave it there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. On the other side of the break, we're going to give away another set of tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College game at MTS Center. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the good people at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done.
Had some good Carbone pizza last week.
I was going to say, I don't know about you guys. We've been on since about 10:15 right now, but I'm getting a little bit hungry there.
Yeah. Let's go to Carbone and get a couple pies.
Could use a couple Carbones.
Yeah.
Just saying that. Throw that out there.
Banana peppers on there.
Oh, I love the banana peppers.
I love banana peppers on a pizza.
Oh, I don't think I like it the amount of anything else besides pizzas and sandwiches.
And your cereal.
No, I never. What? That's crazy talk. You know that some people eat cereal with water?
What? Who are those people?
Who? I've heard about it on TV before.
Anyways, I'm not even...
On television, on the telly.
Let's give away another couple tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College game. First person to call in at 780-1290 that knows the answer to the following question. Which two former UND alum play for the New Jersey Devils? Call Michael Remus, 780-1290. Which two former UND alum play for the New Jersey Devils? 780-1290.
Can I
area
talk
code,
a little... Oh, sorry.
Area code 204-780-1290.
You know who's... I want to talk a little bit more about Steve Zalewski. I love this story. I want to quickly just tell this story because I think it's pretty great. Travis Zajac was injured yesterday, and the bus that was carrying the Albany River Rats pulled over on the New Jersey Turnpike. We were on that turnpike, I believe, when we were going to New Jersey, right?
You took a subway to New Jersey.
Okay.
You never drove anywhere.
The bus driver got off and told Steve Zalewski that he was being called up to the New Jersey Devils. Rich Shear in the New York Star-Ledger wrote about this. I thought it was a good article. And told him that he was going to be playing tonight because Zajac was injured. And it's funny, he didn't have any... He only had enough clothing for a couple of nights. I guess they were only going on a short trip.
Was this the story of Hanukkah?
And Steve Zalewski has been playing on a line this year with Vladimir Zarkov and Steven Gionta, younger brother of Brian Gionta. So I think it's a great story. He gets into the lineup. And it's relevant because... he's a graduate, or went to, Clarkson University, Steve Zalewski.
Clarkson College.
Clarkson College, whatever. Yeah. I mean, college in the U.S. is the same thing as university, really, right?
I'm not 100% sure what the difference is, but yeah, more or less. Yeah. You're okay in saying
I went to the College of Winnipeg, University of Winnipeg. I went to Red River College. So we'll try to get that in as a future trivia question, along with what I like to put in my cereal, which apparently now is water. So... go ahead, Drew.
Thank you. Are you done? I'm hopeful you're done. Yeah, I'm hopeful. Brian Burke, in only how Brian Burke can do so, came out this week and had a nice little rant.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't he do up his tie?
He always does that.
Why? I mean, sorry. I mean, Brian, I mean, you're doing a press conference.
That was the one around his neck, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a little odd.
Why did he do a press conference with his tie like that? I mean, a well-dressed Irish guy like that, come on.
I'm not 100% sure why he did his tie like that. I don't think it's that
bizarre.
Important in the grand scheme of things.
Let's
boil it down to a number of things. I mean, Brian Burke obviously has a stance on the league, and we'll speak about that in a second. But I think what Brian Burke also removed attention away, drew attention away from the fact that he
wasn't wearing a tie.
He removed his tie. He drew attention away from the fact that he gave Colton Orr a four-year, $4 million contract. Mm-hmm. No fault of Colton Orr's. Who wouldn't accept that contract?
Yeah, I take it.
To a guy who is, you know, his skill set is easily replaceable, frankly, and readily available on the free agent or waiver market, gave him a four-year, $4 million deal. And because he wasn't useful anymore, quote-unquote, into the way the game is played, although it really was the
same
way. He
had some concussion issues.
2 years ago. True also.
Yeah.
True also, as he. But he sends him to the minors. And partially because, you know, he's not useful. Partially because he gets to save the million-dollar cap hit because you can pay the salary and not have it count against the cap. So you really, you know, you've given a guy an unnecessary contract. Part of the reason why he's maybe being sent down is because of the unnecessary contract. And then you come out and your whole stance is about the way the game has gone as opposed to the poor contract you gave him and the poor signing that it was. So I think a little bit of that is, I think there's a little bit of his arrogance, as it always seems to be, is working in there because he did something wrong. Oh, he made a mistake, excuse me. It looks like a mistake. He's trying to cover it up a bit, and this is a good way to do it, as well as support his player. I think there's a little bit of motivation in there for him to cover his own butt.
True. Hold on. I just want to say one thing here. Is Brian Burke set to release a novel on what not to do in the world of sports media? Because he had the Christmas Twitter fiasco is what we were calling it, Drew, when we were on the air last week doing the big show. He decides to announce Ron Wilson's contract extension on Boxing Day. It was Boxing Day, right? Or was it Christmas? Regardless, it was bad timing.
It was Christmas.
And now he has this bizarre half tie wearing press conference where it almost seemed like he was trying to make himself feel less guilty by saying that the NHL has less fighting, and that's why they had to send Colton Orr down. I mean, they're sending Colton Orr down because there's not a roster spot for him right now.
With all due respect to Colton Orr, does anybody in the NHL miss Colton Orr not being there?
He's from Winnipeg. He's a good guy. I mean, he's a fighter. He's made a career off of being an enforcer.
Anybody paying money to see Colton Orr play hockey?
No, I understand that, Drew. And you know, maybe my issue is this. I don't think that strictly fighters have a place in the game. I think guys who can fight have a place in the game. I understand Brian Burke's concern about the quote-unquote rats running around. I think there is a little bit of a lack of accountability, but I'm not necessarily sure, and I actually don't think at all, that you need strictly a fighter to deal with that lack of accountability. Yep. That goes to the league, the way they deal with Matt Cook. That goes to the players on the ice. That goes to you know, players answering the bell themselves. So somewhat of his perspective, I don't think it's the problem is solved by the way he wants to solve it or thinks it should be solved by.
It just doesn't. It seems like
it's a bizarre press conference. Let's be honest.
I think that more or less it was Richard's point is exactly right. He gave Colton Orr a terrible contract, and nobody's talking about that part anymore. All they're talking about is how Brian Burke thinks, you know, stands up for his guys, and he thinks there should be a place for Colton Orr. I'm sorry, there probably shouldn't be a place for Colton Orr. He's not that talented. He's not that skilled. He doesn't really bring anything to the table as a player.
Colton Orr is a guy that you're going to dress probably half the games when he's healthy as a fighter.
They dressed him 4 games this year, I think.
No, but I'm saying, it's not like Colton Orr, it's not like there's a big shock here. If you look at Colton Orr's career when he was on the Rangers, he's a fighter. I mean, he's always been a fighter. So it's if anything, that's mismanaging what you have.
I'm fairly okay with the league moving away from having fighters in there exclusively.
Drew, you're a well-dressed guy. I want you to teach Brian Burke how to do up a tie. Why wasn't that? I'm sorry.
Why are you talking about the tie still?
But I don't know. I thought it was unprofessional to give a press conference and have a tie.
Who cares? It doesn't matter. The tie does not matter. Nobody cares about that.
I care about it.
Well, that's great. I mean, but frankly, like, Colton Orr not being in the NHL, and if his roster spot is being taken by somebody who's got more skill and talent, I think is a good thing for the NHL. That's true for a lot of players. I'm not picking on Colton Orr, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of players in this league. I believe that there's probably 30 players in the league that probably don't deserve to be, or maybe more than that. Maybe, you know, that shouldn't be in the league. They're not skilled enough to be hockey players in the NHL.
Some teams, like the New Jersey Devils and the Anaheim Ducks, like to dress staged fighters, if you want to call it that. George Parros is a staged fighter. Cam Jansen on the New Jersey Devils is a staged fighter. Some teams like to dress those types of players.
Those guys have no place in the game anymore.
The Winnipeg Jets aren't doing that right now. And the thing is, there are a lot of teams that are moving towards that. Fighting is down in the NHL. And yes, for those who want to see less fighting in the NHL, I guess guys like Colton Orr not having full-time work in the NHL is a good thing. If that's the point you're trying to make, then you can't really deny that.
Lucky for Colton Orr, he got a 4-year, $4 million deal. He gets to take it to the bank. And he has
or credit union.
And you don't ever blame Colton Orr.
No, I don't begrudge Colton Orr at all. And I mean, look, I have no problem with that at all. But, you know, to
I think part of it's also sticking up for his buddy, Colton Orr. But at the same time, I think part of it's also covering his own butt. And I think it's unnecessary for a press conference to be held on this occasion. Brian Burke likes to hold him when he wants him, and that's the reason he's in Toronto. He likes the spotlight. His team overall is played better for sure.
Yeah.
But and it's funny. It's interesting though. You know, the contrast, of course, and the irony in all of this is he talks about the hard edge and hard play and all that stuff. And his team might be the fastest team in the league. They're a speed team. They're east-west team. They don't really play a mean game aside from Phaneuf. And for all that he talks about of what he wants, he actually has far different moves off the ice. So in that sense, maybe he is coming with the times, although it took him a little bit too long. But don't blame, you know, it's hard. He contradicts himself so many times in the last few comments and few years that he's made that I don't really know where he stands anymore. I mean, he talks about the game, you know, moving that way, but yet seems to finally have adjusted.
Yeah.
But
now he's
the game was
lamenting
kind of like a year or two ago, but he signed Colton Orr. Like, was he giving him a buddy? He still has Mike Brown on the team, though. So while Colton Orr is, his job is kind of fallen by the wayside, he already has Mike Brown, so a redundant addition. Yep. So, I mean, all these things, just you put it together, and how do you make sense of it?
They are getting one more mean guy back. Komisarek is coming back. Mean guy.
But he can play, at least.
Well, he can play.
He can play.
Not as much. Not not as much value.
Not worth his contract.
Go in front of the net. Komisarek is going to make it difficult for you.
Before we go to break, another update from Boston, Vancouver. This has been apparently a chaotic game. Brad Marchand just got 5 minutes in a game. Expect a suspension. He apparently clipped Sammy Salo. And apparently chaos on the ice.
Those two teams don't like each other, Drew. In fact, in Vancouver, they like to riot.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of chatter about this Bruins-Canucks game. Unfortunately, not available anywhere.
Any cars flipping?
Anywhere on national TV in Canada or the U.S., which is quite a shame. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final hour. We'll make it a good one. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final hour here on TSN 1290. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets Sabres tonight, 6 p.m. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call. Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. And Hustler and Question Mark follow us at 3 o'clock. I think that should be the new name of the show, is Hustler and Question Mark.
Why? This isn't the Hustler and Question Mark show.
No, I'm saying it's coming next, up. I'm saying Hustler, they should change it from Hustler and Lawless to Hustler and Question Mark.
No, Hustler and Pollock.
Hustler and Pollock? Okay, fine.
I mean, Question Mark.
Well, you never know who it's going to be with Hustler. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Anyways.
Oh, okay.
Chaos in Boston.
Chaos in Boston. I wasn't kidding, was I?
You weren't.
I wasn't kidding when Remus was giving us the updates. Vancouver scored on the power play, though. The resulting power play. Brad Marchand, 5 minutes in a game for a clipping penalty. He went real low. He went below the knees, and that's a no-go.
I watched it again about 10 times while during the break there.
10 times?
Yeah.
In the war room?
Yeah, I kept replaying. I couldn't tell Drew if he hit him direct contact on the hip, quad, or the knees. I don't like Brad Marchand. I think he's a dirty player, but I have to see that probably 10 more times to figure out if that actually was the dirtiest
hit ever. The dirtiest hit ever.
Well, that's what everybody's saying on Twitter. I mean, this is the thing, guys. My first response to the hit would be it's a little bit blown out of proportion. But, I mean, Marchand's reputation precedes him, I guess.
And, I mean, anything with these two teams is just magnified.
How many of those tweets are coming from Vancouver? You know what?
It was an old-school hockey hit.
No problem with that hit.
You are such a... You're just being argumentative for the sake of being argumentative. But it was not... It's coming across the board from all the hockey writers watching this game. I got to tell you. I want to see Boston-Vancouver 7-game for Stanley Cup final.
I like to see the hate. That's why I like the Rangers-Flyers. I like to see the hatred.
Yeah, I mean, and this rivalry between the two is absolute chaos, as we've been saying.
Hey, Brad Marchand was a key piece of that Boston team. He's a hard-nosed player.
He was incredible.
Got tons of key goals. You know, you can't take that away from him.
No, certainly not. You'll be suspended for a couple games for that hit, though, I'm pretty sure.
Might be.
Yeah.
We'll have to see what Mr. Shanahan says.
I guess so.
I mean,
it was. Remember that it was. Again, I only saw it. I saw it a few times, but I mean, it wasn't.
He did get a misconduct in the game, so he
Salah was
kind of
running at him, and he kind of ducked and went low. I guess, but like it wasn't like he ran at him and went low.
We'll have to wait for Shanny's video, Richie.
Yeah, Shanny's video. That's a terrible job. Who wants that job?
He needs to stop with those videos.
Let's quickly before.
I don't
we get
like
to,
those videos.
I know those are weird. The second half award, by the way, we're going to get into all that now. But quickly
sorry,
say that
that Trevor Linden ad for Clearly Contacts is tripping
me
out right now.
Tripping me out too. it just ripped me out. But the thing is, Drew, I thought he did a good job with Carcillo. That's a good suspension. And Bork, I thought both were good. So let's just put that on the table.
Yeah, I mean, the Rene Bork, it's just unnecessary.
Yeah, kind of like Trevor Linden doing contact commercials.
Well, you just hit him with an elbow right in the jaw, and there's absolutely no reason to do it. I mean, then you got to get that out of the game. That's just it. He targeted the head, he went for the head, and he should get it suspended as a result. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
There's a little gray area with the Marchand hit because... The timing, the puck was there.
Well, the Marchand, it was in the course of the action.
Not a head hit, but it's the knees. If he's targeting knees, hey, if you're talking about targeting the head, targeting the knees is probably worse, if not the same. So we'll have to wait and see. Could be bad news for Boston.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, let's give away another set of tickets. Caller number three. Sure. At 780-1290.
Why three? FNUF's number?
No, just why not? Caller number three at 780-1290. You'll win two tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College game at
MTS
Center. Babe Ruth's number.
You have been confused for a babe.
That's true. I am a babe in my own special way. So call Michael Remus, 780-1290, caller number three, and we'll win.
Sorry, I was just throwing up in my own mouth.
First half awards for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's look back. Today is the 41st game for the Winnipeg Jets this year.
Are we doing the Druzies?
Not called the Druzies, but I like that. That's funny.
Or the Druies.
If you had to, I guess there could be some debate between your MVP, Andrei Pavlich and Evander Kane.
No, or no debate. No. It's not even close. It's Pavlik.
See, I think you're out of your mind.
I think you're out of your mind, too.
Not even close. Okay. How many goals how many games has Evander Kane scored goals in? And how many wins and how many games has Andrei Pavlik?
You're talking about Andrei Pavlik, who has numbers that are outside the top 30 in the National Hockey League.
Okay, I mean, his numbers might be outside the top 30, how many games has he won for the Jets? How many games Kane has won for the Jets?
I mean, the goalie's always going to win more games, quote-unquote, because he's a goalie. You look at Kane, he has 18 goals. He's on pace for over 35 goals this year, guys.
Right.
I mean, close to 40, frankly.
Yeah.
Because he's missed a game, and they've played in their 41st one tonight. So he's on pace for between 35 to 40 goals.
to me, he's the only guy who consistently drives the play at the opposing net. You know, Burmistrov and those guys were playing well at the beginning of the season. Wheeler was struggling. Who plays with Wheeler when he gets going? Kane. Kane is the guy who drives this team. You know, he
offensively.
You might say you have issues with his, well, the reports of his character. I don't care. He's the best player in the team to me. He's been the best player this season. He's the MVP. I don't think there's any question about it.
What?
I really don't. I'm completely honest. I don't think there's any question about it. I think he's the best player in the team.
Hold on. I'm saying that there's no question about Pavlik winning it. You know what? To be honest with you, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. Best offensive player.
You said that you think that.
No, well, as far as the MVP goes, but I think this is the way I look at MVP. It always comes down to. It always comes down to stats. And the thing is, I think you take one guy out of the lineup. Which one guy do you take out of the lineup and it would have the most negative impact, I would say, is Pavlik. And I realize that the goalie is obviously always going to have the wins and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you look at what one player has maybe had the impact on a team, on this team the most, and if in a positive way, I do think Kane is in the conversation, I guess, but I think it's Pavlik. I think he's stolen more games.
Let me ask you this. If you take Kane out of the lineup and you take Pavlik out of the lineup, who's harder to replace?
I think that's it's an easy answer.
No.
It's an easy answer that the answer is Evander Kane.
Do you think Chris Mason would have as many wins as Andre Pavlik?
Maybe not as many.
Maybe not as many, but I think he's more... You can always find a goaltender. I think Chris Mason is closer to Andre Pavlik than anybody is to Evander Kane.
You know how much I love Chris Mason, too, so I'm not just saying that. I think Andre Pavlik has had more of an... I look at Evander Kane. He went 7 games without a goal. So you're talking about, you're saying that Evander Kane is the only guy that's been offensive, but he went through a drought 7 games without a goal. So who is the guy in those 7 games?
Still playing the other team's best players now, driving the play.
You go around the league and you ask what's more replaceable, a goaltender, a good goaltender.
We're not talking about the best player in the Jets. We're talking about the most valuable player. Not the most, but best. There's a difference.
Yeah, fine. The most valuable
player
in the Jets,
is Kane, and I'm saying most valuable is Pavlik. So I'm agreeing that he's the best player in the team, but I'm saying he's not the most valuable. The Jets were winning.
Ezzie, who would be scoring for this team if it wasn't for Evander Kane?
It doesn't matter
how good Andre Pavlik is if nobody can score.
Is it fair? Is it Mietnin?
But Andre Pavlik got those wins when Kane wasn't scoring. 7 games he didn't score a goal.
Just because he doesn't score.
Does your most valuable player go 7 games without a goal?
You can still have an impact without scoring.
Yeah, and you can still take pressure off the other lines by playing the other team's best players if you're not scoring. I think, well, you can go to the next one, Drew. That's a good debate, though.
I mean,
under the best defenseman?
Yeah.
Well, once again, it's always going to be 2-on-1. I predicted the Jets would make the playoffs, and you guys both said no. So.
And I think we're going to be proven right.
Okay. A week changes everything, right? Last week you were saying I was right, and okay. We'll have to wait till 82 games to make that decision.
It's usually how long you do have to wait.
Or maybe 60 games.
Best defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. And this one's a tough one because they've had so many injuries.
No, I don't think it's a tough one.
Okay, go for it.
If you don't say Zach Bogosian, then we're going to have the same argument. It's Byfuglien or Bogosian. It's not Enstrom. He's missed 20 games.
No, I agree. It's between those two.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And it's interesting, Yezzy, because my first inclination would be to Bogosian, but after further thought, I mean, it might be... I think it's
Mark Flood?
Well, I think, Yezzy, it's probably Byfuglien because of the way he started playing later on. And I realize, and you know, he plays a lot of the same competition that Bogosian do, and they're trying to match the lines. I mean, sometimes they have certain matchups, but I have to say Byfuglien by a small hair because of how much he can provide on the offensive end. And I realize he's not a defensive dynamo, but his offensive ability, I think he's a third leading scorer on the team right now, guys.
Yeah.
And on the way he adds on the power play, and he can jump into the play, I would say Byfuglien, but by a small margin over Zach Bogosian.
I would agree with Richard that it's Byfuglien.
That's a surprise.
Well, I'll tell you, and the reason why I think he's solidified. I mean,
what we're doing right now is completely useless.
Well, it's completely
top
subjective.
10 list
Well,
useless.
It's subjective. We're giving our opinion. I mean, that's, you know, it's
we should go to the All-Star game. Kane, okay.
No, I mean, I'm not going to have that conversation because that's just boring. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's reasonable at the halfway point to
because this is riveting.
Oh, Jesse, take it easy here.
Easy there, boy.
Well, I mean, I think.
I am a supporter of Bogosian. Now, tell me why Bogosian over Byfuglien. Like, make that argument to me.
Not really. I don't really want to.
Okay, I'll make the argument for you. I think Bogosian.
Well, that's not your argument.
Well, that's fine because I'm arguing for both of them. Frankly, I think Byfuglien by a little bit. I think Bogosian, guys, is a great skater, good hitter. He's really learned to simplify his game, and Charlie Hattie's done a big part in that. And so has Bogosian, taking it upon himself. They play with a variety of pairings. You know, Stewart's probably been his main guy for the most part, although they're not playing together today, and they haven't fairly recently. He's played really well and kept it really simple, and I think he's limited chances on many nights. The only issue is, and he's scored a bit now, the only issue I think is the drawback is his ability to create offense, and not only from in the offensive zone, but even from his own zone. I think Byfuglien really has a keen...
He's coming along, though.
He does, but you can't teach that, does he? I think he's got a keen sense, Byfuglien, of where to go with the puck and where it needs to go. And he, sure, he makes turnovers. I'm sure he makes risky plays.
But I think he's cut back on those as the season's developed. And he's playing a lot more comfortable, I think.
That's why. And
he's picking his spots better.
Yeah, exactly, Drew. And I think he's matured. And I think that people like to...
He's only 21 years old.
No, that's a great point. That's true. Bogosian
is not really a point; it's a fact. But
well, I mean, he's definitely stepped. He's definitely stepped
in the fact.
The Jets have to be happy with Zach Bogosian's development so far this season. I don't think there can be any dispute about that whatsoever. There were questions about him after last season in Atlanta, and he's I think answered those for the most part.
It's been a 180 in terms of productivity.
Is he going to be a number one defenseman? No. I don't think so. No. But is he going to be a
circular argument?
A solid two or a three or a very good three?
I think there's a big difference between the two and the three, really, but. Drew, I think, is he a top... We asked that, and that was in our commercial, of course. Is he going to be a... I think we can say confidently he's a top four guy, but is he going to be a top two guy? I still can't answer that. I need a little more time.
He just seems a step or so slow. Not slow in terms of foot speed, because he's a great skater, but maybe his instincts are just a half a step slow.
I would agree
much like Blake Wheeler's instincts are at least a half a step slow.
I think Blake Wheeler's a little better instincts, but can't get it done. I'm not sure Bogosian has the instincts... to do that play. You know what I mean? I think Wheeler thinks of it a second too late. I'm not sure Bogosian thinks of the plays Wheeler does.
It's like, you know, you have to be fronting, you have to tie up the goal against Toronto. You have to be tying up Phil Kessel's stick there.
That's been a problem for him all year.
You know, you have to front the guy in front of the net and you have to wrap him up. But just because you're next to him doesn't mean you're doing your job until you really shut him down by tying him up there.
Lots to like. I mean, I think there's limitations within him, but I do think that overall there's lots to like. And I've really liked this game, and I think he's come a long way.
Yeah, and
I think the ceiling is a little bit lower than maybe some others believe.
Yeah, he's not going to be Drew Doughty, but I mean, I thought this year he might have played better than Drew Doughty so far this year.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
Doughty hasn't started well.
No, we only saw Drew Doughty for that one game, but Zach Bogosian impressed me more than Drew Doughty did on that in that game against LA.
What's the next award?
Well, the next award's a commercial break. That's what you get awarded.
Two awards. It's not awards.
Okay, after the break, are we going to give Noel his rating? Because I'm interested in that.
Absolutely. That's what we're going to do. So stay tuned. We're going to rate Claude Noel after these commercial messages. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey, tonight being represented by Ezra Ginsberg and Michael Remus.
We're going to do more trivia
for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Let's go now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program. He called back in Randy Hahn, the San Jose Sharks play-by-play man. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Sorry to stiff you. I was deep in conversation with Craig Laughlin of the Washington Capitals broadcast team and completely slipped my mind, so my apologies.
No worries. No problem whatsoever.
I'll make it up to you when I'm in Winnipeg next week with a cold one and a side of Goldeye.
We'll hit a rolls.
Yeah. We're going to be held to that now, Randy. We're going to carry around the audio of that, so in case you try and renege on that bet or anything.
Exactly.
Sharks visit, obviously, into Winnipeg next Thursday. First visit in, I guess, 15 years to Winnipeg for the San Jose Sharks. Let's start with the Sharks. Always at the perennial Western Conference champion. And year in, year out, you ask, is this the year for the San Jose Sharks to take that next step and represent the Western Conference?
So you're asking me again, is this the year?
Yeah.
Boy, certainly hope so. But it's a different year, as every season is different. And I think this one for the Sharks is a work in progress. They haven't been outstanding. They haven't been bad. They've just kind of been. And over the last couple of weeks, they're much more positively trending in an upward direction. They've taken over first place in the division by a point over LA, and they're in that three spot in the Western Conference right now. And the other thing that, depending on how you look at it, they have to their advantage is that they play fewer games than everyone else in the Western Conference, they've only played 37 games, and for example, LA and Phoenix in their division have played four more at 41. So they have some games in hand, but you have to win those to make them count. But they're in a pretty good place right now. They've won three in a row and seven out of nine. And trying to work on special teams, which has probably been the biggest obvious problem this year. They're only 17th on the power play and 28th on penalty kill, second worst in the league. So there's a lot of area for improvement in those areas in the second half of the season. And if they can get those improved and get the problems fixed there, then they should be in pretty good shape heading into the playoffs. And then, of course, once the tournament starts, who knows? But they still have the core that got them to the Western Conference final last year. They have the goalie who won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago with the Chicago Blackhawks, and they have what should be a better blue line with Brent Burns on it now. So they have some pieces in place, but as I say, they've been average until recently, and now they seem to be on the uptick.
Randy, you just mentioned Brent Burns, and I have a couple of questions, a two-part question, if you will, about Brent Burns' big acquisition in the offseason that was actually during the NHL draft in Minneapolis, and it was announced when I was there, so I always like to plug that in there. How do you think he's done so far, you know, in his first half of season with the San Jose Sharks, and do you think he's growing into the role that he's been given by Todd McClellan?
I think that's a good way of putting it. I think that if you're going to, you know, paint a perfect picture, the growth into the role would have been a little more accelerated than it has been for Brent Burns. Six goals, 12 points. So, you know, you always think of the offensive side when you bring a defenseman with a big shot into a structure such as the Sharks have with some great offensive players. But I think that what you need to take a closer look at is his play defensively. That's the most important transition that they felt, the coaching staff felt, he had to make in the first half of this season. I'm not saying he brought bad habits with him from Minnesota, but he played within a different structure and a different system and had to assimilate here into what Todd McClellan and his staff wanted. And I think that's been the focus on the first half of the year. He is a plus 10. He's a plus player. We know what a big body he is, and we know what a great shot he has. And I think that as he continues to increase his comfort level within the system and the structure that the Sharks coaches bring into play, I think you'll see a better second half from Brent Burns. They're certainly hopeful of it. They're certainly expecting it. They made a big commitment to Brent once they made the trade for him, giving him a five-year contract extension. So he's going to be part of this San Jose Sharks situation for a long time going forward. And I don't think that there's a need to rush things. But having said that, I think they would have liked to see the progression occur a little more quickly than it has.
Randy, a couple of veterans were added also in the offseason. The overall core of the team's been together for a long time. But can you maybe speak a little bit about performances so far of Michael Hanzus and Colin White?
Michael Hanzus has come into a situation where the Sharks were looking to, I think, have better third and fourth line play, but particularly in his case, third line play. They felt that they were outplayed, especially by Vancouver in the conference final last year, by the third and fourth lines. And Hanzus on the scene has, you know, he's one of the pieces that needs to change the third line. And I think he has done that. He's very good defensively. He's a penalty killer. He's very good in faceoffs. And the Sharks a couple of years ago lost Manny Malhotra, and that was a big loss for them because of what he provided in that faceoff role as a third line player. Hanzu's numbers aren't there as far as generating a lot of points, although he had a huge shootout deciding goal the other night in Vancouver. He's very good at that. You know, veteran presence, that guy who is going to work with the players alongside him to make them better. Players like Jamie McGinn, who's having a breakthrough year for the Sharks, and you talk to McGinn, and he credits a lot of his confidence and development this year playing with somebody like Michael Hanzus. So he's been a good presence. Colin White is a smaller body of work because of the injury situation that he's been through. He's on IR right now and hasn't been consistently in the lineup all that much. And I think that what Colin White will bring to the Sharks still needs to be determined once he gets back off IR. But he did have a stretch before he got hurt where he had settled into a good defensive defenseman role. And, of course, he brings that experience coming from New Jersey with Stanley Cups.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Randy Hahn, play-by-play man for the San Jose Sharks. The Sharks-Jets going to take place Thursday night at MTS Center. So we're going to preview that matchup, get a little insight into the San Jose Sharks. Randy, when you look at the Sharks lineup, you know, the sort of a
bunched up at the top in terms of goal scoring, Thornton, Marlowe, Pavelski. The guy that jumps out to me is Logan Couture. What is the ceiling for Logan Couture as a player?
I don't think there is one. I think you're looking at a player that will... he has the opportunity. You know, he's a very good young player right now. He just lost out in the Rookie of the Year last year to Skinner. But I don't think there is a ceiling for Logan. He can be a star in this league. He might have the potential to be a superstar in this league. If you look at the Sharks organization and the young players at the forward position, there's no one else that even comes close to being the top prospect in this organization. You know, he's already a permanent fixture on the second line at center, mostly playing with Ryan Clough on his left wing. And he's a tremendous talent. And, you know, you always look for that player who makes those around him better. And Logan Couture absolutely does that. Does he still need work? Of course. You know, he's a young player. And I just think that, to answer your question again, I don't think there is a ceiling for Logan. I think he has a chance to be huge in the NHL going forward.
Randy, when the Sharks come into Winnipeg next week, obviously there's the big line with Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, and Joe Pavelski, and then you know you've got a really good second line that you've already mentioned, and a line I'm sure that you've enjoyed watching and that has kind of come together and out of nowhere, guys they're kind of developing later in their career is Andrew Murray, Andrew Desjardins and Brad Winchester kind of coming together as an unlikely trio and playing more minutes. What's it been like for that line, and maybe what can Jets fans expect when the Sharks are in town watching that line, which has basically, you know, been a very solid line for the Sharks this year?
Yeah, except it was broken up last game.
So. Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Forget what I just said then.
Yeah, no, and they have played most of the year together. You know, tonight we're probably going to see Winchester playing with Desjardins and Jamie McGinn, and Murray... is probably not going to be in the lineup because Torrey Mitchell's going to come back and he sat out. So it's hard to say what's going to happen by the time we get to Winnipeg as these things tend to change the game. But they have established an identity, that's for sure. And Winchester has been a great pickup. He was a pro tryout at training camp and signed to a free agent contract by Doug Wilson. And Brad Winchester's been terrific. I mean, in 37 games, he's four goals, 7 points, gives you that big physical presence. He's got a great shot. He scored a goal the other night off the post in Anaheim, which was just an amazing shot, great goal. And he's a terrific locker room guy as well, very popular in the dressing room with the guys. And he and Desjardins have worked really well off each other. Andrew Murray hasn't had quite the impact on the right wing on that line. But as a group, they've been solid. Just the decision-making with the coaching staff now seems to be wheeling a different winger in and out of that group over the last couple of games. But that, of course, could change, and we could see those three back together by the time we get to the windiest corner in the world.
Randy, you had mentioned that the team struggled on the penalty kill. Now, a couple years ago, consistently, the team was in the top five. Last year, they struggled. This year, they seem to be struggling maybe even worse. What has been the biggest difference, or what's been the reason for the decline?
I wish I could give you a really good answer to that, because then I would tell the coaching staff and then I'd be a hero. It's, you know what it is. It's the old cliches, but I guess they're cliches because they're true. The penalty kill has to outwork the power play, and you know, throw that in with a few bad breaks here and there. And it really started from game one. They beat Phoenix 6-3 in the first game of the year, but they gave up 2 power play goals in that game, and it's just been, they've been struggling with it ever since. A little better of late. They've killed 23 out of 26, but they haven't been able to crawl out of that bottom two or three spots. So it's a work in progress, and, you know, little tweaks here and there. Can't tell you much more than that, except that, you know, they're just trying to be more consistent on the penalty kill and do the same things night after night, and hopefully it'll get better. So far, it's shown signs that it is.
Randy, we'll let you go on this one last question. If the Sharks were going to add anyone around the trade deadline, what area would they be looking to upgrade, do you figure?
Well, you know, they lost Martin Havlat to injury, and he's out for 6 weeks. And, you know, he'll be back come playoff time from this injury. That's not to say that Doug Wilson wasn't looking to add something anyway before Havlat got hurt. And Wilson tends to make a deal just about every year before the trade deadline, and he usually tends to make it before the deadline. He, except in the case I'm thinking back of Brian Campbell, which I think was on trade deadline day, he usually likes to make his moves before the trade deadline. The Sharks will go through some organizational meetings next week, and if you look in their history, they've tended to make their moves after those meetings. So I think that you would probably be looking to bolster that third and fourth lines, maybe with a guy that could move up and play a second-line role. Right now, Ben Ferriero, who's up from Worcester, has been productive. He's got 4 goals in only 10 games this year, playing earlier last week with Thornton's line when Marleau was on the second line, and now Ferriero's playing on the line with Couture and Klo, and he's been good. But I think that Wilson would certainly look to try and find a way to beef up the third line with a swing kind of player who could also step up and play on a top line if needed.
Randy Hahn, play-by-play man for the San Jose Sharks, thank you for joining us. We'll see you Thursday in Winnipeg.
All right, guys. Thanks for being patient and waiting for me.
Our pleasure, Randy. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Randy.
Before we go to break, let's give away another set of tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College game. Caller number 6.
Oh, I have a question.
I don't know if we're going to have 6 callers.
That's 780-1290.
6 callers. We're not Hustler and Lawless here, Drew.
I want the question to be for the tickets. How old is Drew?
You want people to have to answer that?
Cut the number of call.
Yeah, I like that.
The tickets go to the person who can correctly guess Drew's age.
And a hint, it's over 40.
No, it's not. First person to know my age at 780-1290 wins the tickets. Let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to today's guests, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News and Randy Hahn, the San Jose Sharks play-by-play man. In case you missed any of those interviews or missed any of the extended version of this program in its entirety, it will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Or it is also available on the tsn.ca/Winnipeg website. That'll be later on. I think start Monday it'll be available there.
As you didn't think we're going to get any calls, I walk in. There's already like 10 guesses for your age in the room, and then there's 6 calls at one time.
The phone lines are jammed.
As he's the biggest hater out there.
I'm not a hater.
Yeah, you hate as much as Dave Minuk does.
I was kidding. You guys
happy anniversary to Dave Minuk, by the way.
Dave Minuk also says illegalcurve.com has as much content as usual, or more content than usual
today.
Yeah,
it's because I'm writing.
Today, of course, yes, you can catch up on everything on illegalcurve.com, your home for the Winnipeg Jets in Winnipeg. Congratulations to Dale. He is the winner of the Guess the Drew Mandel Age.
Correctly guess Drew's age. Yes. 52.
Yeah.
52.
Great work, Drew.
Thank you. We still have one more set of tickets to give away.
How many tickets do we have?
We have 6 sets of tickets. We've given away 5 now, so we have one more to go.
All right.
You see how I did this?
We only have
math
one
there?
More segment, so we got to give it away here.
No, we have about 25 minutes, so we have plenty of time.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Let me do the hosting. You just do the...
Well, whatever. I hosted the big show.
Whatever it is you do on this program, you just sit over there and keep doing it.
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about... continue on with our grades, and let's talk about the grades of head coach Claude Noel. Ezzy, we will let you go first with your grade for Mr. Noel.
And you're doing this, Richie is doing this on purpose, so I can't just jump in afterwards.
Well, you're in a very antagonistic mood at this point.
No, I'm not. I'm not antagonistic at all. The thing is here, it's you can't really, you guys can't both, actually you probably can take the same grade.
I'll tell you what, you go first, then I'll go second, and then Richie can go third.
Okay, I'm going to give Coach Claude Noel a C+. And I'm going to give Coach Claude Noel a C+, because I think that he's done a pretty good job. We're at the halfway point in the season. The Jets are 3 games above 500 and a couple points out of a playoff spot. And I expect, I predicted the Jets will make the playoffs, and I still think they will make the playoffs. I have to stick by it, and I think they can. They have a tough road stretch coming up. But I think when you look at how Atlanta came to Winnipeg and they had to quickly get their team together, and there was a lot of moving parts at the beginning of the season and a lot of decisions that had to be made. I think the Jets had that terrible start, and they were 4 games under 500, I believe, or a couple games under 500 before December started. So
I think that Claude Noel has done a good job with transitioning the team in a move and dealing with a tough road schedule at the beginning. They had the awesome December, and I think that makes his great hire. And I think that he has done a good job dealing with injuries, especially on defense. Guys like Mark Flood have come in, and players like that have come in and done a good job. I think on forward, I've had some issues with how he's managed some of the forward lines. I think that I have some issues with specifically a guy like Alexander Burmistrov of late. But I think overall, I'm going to give him a C+.
Okay, that's well argued. I will next go so that you cannot accuse me of just piggybacking on Richard.
So well, I know Richard's not going to piggyback on you, so...
Yeah. I'm going to give him a grade... I'm going to give him a grade of a B.
Okay.
And I think for a lot of the same reasons you just said, I mean, I like the way that he's been willing to mix and match, and he's not being stubborn, and he's trying different things. I'm not crazy about some of his line combinations or his, I think his, what I'm going to call burial, for lack of a better word at the moment, of Alex Burmistrov. But I think he's done a good job with a lot of problems on the defensive side of the game. When the defense was riddled with injuries, I thought he handled that pretty well. I like the way he handled Evander Kane at the beginning of the year, where there were some growing pains there. And I like the way he's sort of managed the media and managed expectations in the city. So
he gets an A+ for the type of personality he is.
He's very, right, so very already, entertaining.
You're already flip-flopping.
Yeah. No. I'm saying his personality, but we're talking overall his coaching.
It's flip-flop.
No.
I'll give him a B.
He's a great guy.
I'll give him a B. That's what I'm going to give him. I also think, by the way, and I mean... I think that there's probably a good sponsorship opportunity there for anybody that owns a suit company in the city of Winnipeg.
He only has three suits.
He has three suits. Wears them in rotation.
I have two, he's doing pretty
well.
You're
not a head coach in the NHL.
And he's breaking He's breaking all the Labor Day rules, you know.
Yeah, a light-colored suit in the fall and the winter. It's supposed to be a dark-colored suit. It is. I mean, these are basic fashion rules.
You're the guy that said it wasn't important that Brian Burke did up his tie. Now you're talking to
maybe
me
Drew
about suits. Drew's a fashion flip-flop.
All I'm saying, I don't know how many ties Brian Burke has, but...
Let's be honest. You wanted to see that tie. It bugged you a little bit.
I'll give him a B+. And I'll give him a B+ because of I do have the same issues with him as you guys mentioned. I'll add something in. I do think that his line combinations do leave much to be desired at times, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the road record isn't great, and that needs to improve.
Yep.
These are the third drawback I'd say. I think he's overplayed Pavlik, and I think that's going to be an issue later on in the season. Maybe not now, but later on in the season. Those are the three issues. What I do like about him, the special teams has improved.
Yep.
The underlying numbers are good. I think he manages expectations well, as you guys mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think he manages personality as well. I don't think he gets too high. I don't think he gets too low.
That's a good point.
He gives the media too much to work with, and I think the players, for the most part, are playing hard for him, for the most part. He matches players up when they need to. If they match up the Slater line against Ovechkin, he matches up, you know, Bufflin with guys that he needs to, and Bogosian with guys. He's flexible in that regard. He also gives the hard face-offs and stuff like that to Slater and those guys. I think he runs the bench the right way. I think there's room to grow, but I think overall, if you told me this team would be, you know, in a playoff spot, you know, 2 or 3 days ago,
mm-hmm.
I probably would have thought you were a little bit... optimistic,
right.
and as you correctly said,
and I've always said that me predicting the Jets make the playoffs was optimistic.
But I think the overall job that he's done, I think it's been quite good. There's been a lot of distractions,
yeah.
A lot of the stuff could have gone wrong, and he could have said, you know, it's a bad year. I think that, you know, comments like he made about Scheifele having to play poorly to not make the team, I think he's moved off those comments, probably with coaching, probably with some maturation,
yep.
And I think he's made the team his own, and I think he's done a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and if you think about it, C+ to B+, I mean, it's pretty close. We're all fairly in agreement. I mean, Drew's in the middle, and to be honest with you, I think I could have easily gone up to a B or a B plus.
Yeah, I mean, we're all in the same ballpark. I think most people, I mean, with the exception of Gary Lawless, who would give him an F, I'm sure, just because that's
well, Gary Lawless has given me an F before for just in the press box for no reason. He's like, Ginsburg, you get an F.
Walks up and just hands you a big F.
He just gives me an F. It's in red marker on a piece of paper. I didn't do anything.
Let's move over to Kevin Cheveldayoff, affectionately known in these parts as Chevy.
Yeah.
Who wants to start on this one?
I'll go. I started first. I'll give him, you know, I gave Claude Noel a C+, and I said I could have given him a B, and I'll give Chevy a B. I think, once again, I could have even given him a little bit higher of a grade.
And I guess we are grading Chevy on what he's done since
the
season
on the spot.
Started.
Like, it's really an incomplete grade, but if you
I'm going to give him a B because
Okay, go ahead.
But I mean, we have to
give him a grade so much as a commentary. I think.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because the grades are.
It's hard to say with him.
Right, and I think that you know, especially the in-season moves that he's made, and he's in-season acquired a guy like Antti Miettinen, and I do think that is addressing some of the issues that they have. I think it's really tough to grade him because of some of the injury problems that have happened, such as an Eric Fehr. So when you look at an Eric Fehr, that trade was made because you want to see if he can get back to the form when he was playing well in Washington. So I think that Chevy has made some good moves in the offseason, and you look at a guy like Mark Flood, or even in the beginning of the season, a guy like Kyle Wellwood, who, even though he's struggled big time as of late, those guys have played prominent roles. So I think that it's tougher to evaluate a GM on half season than it is a coach.
I totally agree.
But I do think that his long-term vision is always in the forefront for Chevy, and he's never going to make a move to jeopardize that long-term vision of playing your younger guys.
As of now, it seems like he's a little bit risk-averse, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. We can't tell. It's so hard to get a read on who he is and what he's done. I mean, every move he's made is really a one-year, two-year deal. Bringing a guy in, there's not much risk involved in that, and I think with time, we'll see more of what he's all about now. Pavlik's contract coming up, Kane's contract coming up at the end of the year. So, you know, some UFAs, and whether he trades some of these pending UFA or two. I think all those will all be telltale signs of what he is as a GM. I think right now, it's not easy to give a grade, so we shouldn't give grades. But I think
Every move he's made, though, has been logical.
Your dad's absolutely a teacher. That's why you like grades.
Absolutely. And my mom's a teacher. My
dad was a guidance counselor.
I give you a B for cutting in with
still
that
education
comment.
System. My dad was a professor.
Yeah,
we're all educational backgrounded.
It seems logical. Yeah. And you can't, you know, we'll see. We'll see, obviously, coming up into probably, you know, middle of the summer, we'll see exactly kind of what the kind of GM he is.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see what, and the trade deadline will be an interesting time for
that
this team,
too. That
will
be an indicator as well. You know, it's really a trade deadline and a free agency to see what GM's all
about. I think
about.
Most fans in the city, not that you should make your decisions based on the fans, but most fans in the city are pretty well educated and pretty well knowledgeable about why you would trade certain players or keep certain players when you come to the trade deadline, regardless of where you're at in terms of playoff standings at that point in time.
Right.
So I think that'll be an interesting point. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back, it's one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You all know it. You all love it. And we have one more set of tickets to give away as well.
Oh.
So let's stay tuned for that. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final segment here on this lengthy edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Caller number 4, 780-1290. You'll get our final two tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College matchup. Caller number 4, talk to Michael Remus at 780-1290.
Thanks to Kalen for giving us these tickets, by the way.
Yeah. You're pointing at me like this, Rich.
We're going to do a question there.
Oh, sorry. Nah, forget it. We'll just do caller number 4. I forgot about the question already. Got to remind me about that.
What home state is...
No, we're not doing it. Just caller number 4. Straight caller number 4. Remus has to get the hockey.
Fair enough.
Drew's
Remus
really flip-flopping.
Yeah,
really flip-flopping. You're like Mitt Romney.
Yeah, exactly. That's me in a nutshell.
Rapid fire.
This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. You can call David for all your real estate needs. He's a fantastic real estate agent and a new sponsor here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So we're thrilled to have him on the as part of our sponsorship team. And so we're thrilled to have him. You can call David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Start with Rapid Fire. 24/7 wrapped up earlier this week. The last episode aired on Thursday night.
Have you guys seen it yet? I haven't seen episode 4 yet.
I haven't seen episode 4 either. Taped it.
Watch it.
I have it on PVR as well. Yeah. We'll ask this question. After the first three episodes of 24/7, who are you most drawn to? Whose personality jumps out at you as being the most intriguing?
You guys know one of my favorite hockey players is Scott Hartnell.
I think he's one of the guys. I think he's a fantastic all-around hockey player, great personality. And hockey, it really benefits from personalities like him. He's always kind of got a smile on his face, and he's joking around. His teammates love him. That's one of the guys. Brizgalov is an obvious one. I mean, I don't think anybody, that's a surprise to anyone. I think his sense of humor has really come out, and his personality as well. He's got a really unique personality, so I think himself. Talbot is another guy on Philadelphia. Well, these are all guys on Philadelphia, by the way. There's been some great personalities on the Rangers, too. Those are probably the three guys that stick out.
I think it's hard not to be most intrigued by John Tortorella. I think he's just, he's a very, he's so intense. He seems old-fashioned, fair. I thought he was the most interesting character to watch. The one you're most drawn to seems like the best all-around guy, leader, a guy who can relate to everybody is Ryan Callahan. That was a nice feature with him and his grandmother. His
grandmother, yeah.
He seemed to me to be one of the more charismatic characters on the show.
Okay,
next and the whole story, I was just going to say, and the whole story about how his father always told him to do whatever you do, work hard at it.
That's right.
And yeah, Callahan is one of those guys too, Drew, that he wasn't a top-rated prospect. Him and Dubinsky, and Dubinsky's another guy. Yeah. They weren't guys that were necessarily, you know, these highly touted prospects, and that's kind of become the identity of this team, hardworking team under Torts.
Like them both. I really like them both.
Phoenix Coyotes saga continues on unabated with no end in sight. Nobody seems to want to own the team.
Can somebody just buy this team already? Like, well, nobody wants to buy it. Talk about it at this point.
Well, of course. Well, fortunately, you don't have to talk about it in the context of your own team anymore. That's a nice change in that feature. Simple question. Seattle, Las Vegas, Kansas City, or Quebec City?
I know that Elliot Friedman wrote this week that Seattle may be the favorite for this team. And I understand Seattle being a northern United States city, but at the same time, their arena, Quebec City's arena, what's the difference? Quebec City seems like a more willing participant in this all. I think the Las Vegas talk needs to be thrown out. I think the Kansas City talk, I mean, they have an arena, but does anybody want the team? And you mentioned, Drew, I mean, they should just contract the team, but if anything, they should go to Quebec City. I don't have an issue with Seattle, but I think Quebec City should be first in the priority list.
So I haven't looked too much into this, but I'm assuming the Seattle arena would be where the Supersonics played?
Well, that's
they
the
need
whole
a new
issue,
arena.
Apparently, if they play there to start with, it's similar to America West Arena in Phoenix in that there's the...
They'd have a temporary arena while their new arena was being built?
Poor sight lines, a lot of blocked space, and you can't really see a lot from many of the seats in the upper deck, so... You know, again, Colisée, at least they've played there before. I know it's not great. Maybe you have to put some money into it in the interim while they build a new one. Either way you put it, I mean, this team is a joke, and I think they need to put it somewhere where fans care, even if the arena isn't suitable. Because when you have a suitable arena and no fans, it looks a lot worse.
You can throw out Quebec City. You can throw out Seattle. You can throw out Kansas City, whatever you want. I mean, none of these cities are in a position like Winnipeg was. Winnipeg and True North were just waiting, and there's... You can speculate all you want, but there's no city that has a relatively new arena. MTS Center is 7 years old, and a track record of running an AHL team like Winnipeg and the ownership group. There's nothing out there like that. Quebec City, they have to build an arena, or they're not sure of this or that. And Seattle, there's issues with, like Richie said, the arena's not that great. So you can speculate all you want, but it's not going to be as easy to move a team like the Thrashers to Winnipeg like it will be moving the Coyotes. Somewhere else.
No, it won't be easy at all. NHL All-Star voting came out. The starters were announced, and heavy on the Ottawa Senators, let's say. Do you have any problem with the Ottawa Senators fans stuffing the ballot boxes?
I don't, Drew. I mean, it's why else is there an All-Star game? It's for the fans. Why? Who cares? Yeah. It's for the fans. Let the fans vote. If that's who the home fans want to see, that's who the home fans want to see. No issue with that at all. People complain for no reason to me.
It's all online, right? Online now, right?
Yeah, it's all. So, well, I mean, I think you can still vote in the arenas, but 99% of it is online.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I mean, you've got four Ottawa Senators, and the game's in Ottawa, so that will be a treat for Ottawa fans. And Ottawa, they're in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. They're doing well. Eric Karlsson has shocked everybody. He might win the Norris Trophy this year. So, I mean, it's good that he won he earned the most votes. And yeah, it's one of those things when you give it to the fans, that's kind of the slightly negative thing that can happen to me. I mean, maybe one team gets loaded up, but that just means that less players from that team will be selected because the rest of the players will be selected by the NHL. So, yeah, it's fine. A lot of those players deserve it. Alfredson's only got a few years left.
Yeah.
Carlson's earned it. Maybe the only guy, aside and Spezza, we throw in there, but the only guy is Mahalik, maybe.
If he was healthy, he would have made the team. He's scored enough goals.
That's the only one that you can make an argument.
Albertson's been on a tear lately.
It's the All-Star game, so really, frankly,
exactly.
Who cares?
Exactly.
Last one on Rapid Fire. World Juniors, is this the Canada getting the bronze? Is it good for the World Juniors that Canada doesn't win?
Yeah, it is. It gets more people interested. It's not only our tournament. We've been in the finals, 10 years in a row?
Yeah.
So once in a while, get somebody else involved. First win in 30 years, create some interest in the country. I think that's actually a good thing overall.
Yeah, from a competitive standpoint, it is good that Canada didn't win. But I'm Canadian, and I want Canada to win every year. So from a personal fan perspective, it's not good. But from the competition perspective, it's great. I still don't think there should be 10 teams in the tournament. I think you could easily have 6 teams in that tournament.
Yeah, but then once you take it down to 6 teams, it loses its international cachet or whatever.
And I love the World Juniors more than just as much as anybody. So
I don't love them at all.
Yeah, Richard and I both don't like them
once
at all.
Once again, so. you guys ganging up on me.
I know,
like the gangs of New York over here.
I'm playing the world's smallest violin for you over here, buddy. Anyways, let's wrap it up with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
That was a disturbing point or gesture. I'm going to cheer Patty Elias. He played his 1,000th game last night for the New Jersey Devils versus the Florida Panthers. Got 3 points. There's only two other players that have played that many games for the Devils, Danico and Brodeur. I love the Devils. Elias has had a great career, so I'll cheer him.
Richard Paul.
We haven't talked about this since the beginning, since the first hour and a half that we were on special. People didn't know that we were on for since 10:15 or 10:20 there. I'm cheering Donald Fehr. I think that what he's done here is he's demanded more answers from the league. I think we're now on a more of a level playing field. I hope it doesn't result in labor war, but I hope it results in labor fairness for both sides. But I cheer what he did. He asked for more information. It wasn't provided to him. And right now, it can still be provided, and they can still get an answer if they really want to. But I cheer them not kowtowing to do whatever is pushed before them.
Sounds good. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by sending our best and our best wishes to Jack Jablonski. Jack Jablonski is the Minnesota hockey player who was paralyzed in a game earlier this week. Apparently they're going to have his jersey up, I think, behind the bench for the Wild game tonight. So we're going to do our part. We're going to send our best to Jack Jablonski. If you want to donate to the Jack Jablonski Fund, you can go to jabby13.com. That is jabby13.com. Send our best when on ice tragedies like that, they happen, they're accidental, but we'll send you our best and hope for the best outcome possible in this situation. That's it for this extended version of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to today's guest, Jay Grossman, player agent, joined us at the last minute. A big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. A big thank you to Randy Hahn, play-by-play man for the San Jose Sharks. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to the sponsors of Illegal Curve Hockey, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, and the Cheer Bar and Grill. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And of course, the website that bears our name is www.illegalcurve.com. Congratulations to all the winners of today's UND Clarkson College tickets. Those will be available. Jets Sabres underway 6 o'clock on TSN 1290. Official pregame show with Rick Ralph at 5 o'clock. And following us momentarily, Hustler and Questioner Mark. Hustler, who's on with you? Andrew Hustler Patterson by himself.
I'll stay here with you. I know. Gary said that that's a no-go, but actually that would be 7.5 hours.
Okay.
I have some errands to run.
From our lips to your ears, thanks for listening. We'll be on next Saturday, 8 a.m. Until then, Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.